Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. On May 30th, after a video was shared of an NYPD vehicle driving into a crowd of protesters, City Council Speaker Corey Johnson tweeted, "Driving police vehicles into crowds of protesters is not de-escalation. Shoving and beating nonviolent people is not de-escalation. If the NYPD's intent is to keep folks safe, this isn't it." De-escalation is a term that's quickly become unavoidable in this moment in public speech and private conversations about police and protester dynamics. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wrote in a tweet to the mayor, "This moment demands leadership and accountability from each of us. Defending and making excuses for NYPD running SUVs into crowds was wrong. Make it right. De-escalate." As reported by 538 and the Marshall Project, research shows that when police increase and add tools of force like tear gas or rubber bullets, it leads to more violence at protests. We wanted to get past this colloquial use of de-escalation and understand what it really means and how it works. Dr. Aku is an adjunct professor at John Jay College, where she teaches in the de-escalation program and is a trainer for the NYPD Hostage Negotiator Team and Emergency Service Unit. She's also former president of the New York Association of Black Psychologists, as well as an author, workshop facilitator, and licensed clinical psychologist. Dr. Aku, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So when we're talking about de-escalation, and we hear it in the news, and we hear it used by public officials, what does the word actually mean in terms of policing?
It's really about reducing the intensity of a conflict or a potential violent situation. Really just making sure that everybody is safe.
And when you, I'm writing down what you said. So when you hear it used the way that some of our political folks have been using it, the way people are using it, what would you correct in that usage?
I think it's really just about making sure that everybody understands what that usage means. That I don't think there's anything wrong with the way people are using it. I just don't know if the public understands that it's really about reducing the potential for violence.
How much is one-on-one de-escalation connected to the way we're seeing de-escalation used more often right now in terms of between clashes between police and protesters?
One-on-one de-escalation is a little different than groups. But we are seeing really good examples, like when police take a knee with protesters in terms of those actions and helping reduce the chances of violence.
How is the emphasis on de-escalation or the understanding of de-escalation changed in the time that you've been studying it?
I don't know if the understanding has changed so much as it's now coming. People are talking about it more. You know, people are thinking about it more, but still don't really understand how to do it. And I think that's the complicated part, is people are throwing around this term, but nobody's really talking about, well, how do you de-escalate a situation?
Well, let's talk about some of the strategies that you do teach your students. Where do you start?
I start with really helping people understand the importance of connecting before redirecting. Now, what a lot of people do, and I've seen people do this, mm-hmm. when they are confronted by somebody that is angry and there's potential for violence, they say something like, "Calm down," right? Nobody ever calms down when you tell them to calm down. Right. But people do that all the time because they don't understand the importance of connecting. If you connect with somebody before you redirect their behavior, then they're more likely to follow your redirection. But if you say something like calm down, then they don't feel heard, they don't feel understood, and that tends to escalate things instead of de-escalate. But people don't really understand how to connect. And something like taking a knee with the protesters, that's a way of connecting. Then the protesters feel like, oh, these police officers get it. And that reduces the chance of things becoming more violent.
What about language? It's so interesting that you said when you tell somebody to be calm. We all know that, again, it'll just sometimes enrage someone. What is the kind of initial appropriate language to help bring down the temperature?
Before we even get to language, let me talk about listening.
Okay.
Because that's an important part before language. I say all the time when I do training, we have two ears but one mouth, to remind everybody that you need to listen more than you speak. Because when you're listening, then you'll understand what kind of language you might need to use in order to help de-escalate the situation. So listening helps you figure out, what is this person upset about? right? And once you understand what this person's upset about, then you can start to find some language that might assist beyond calm down. So if the person's upset because they feel like they're not understood, like people are dying and nobody understands, then you can say something like, well, I'm hearing you. I can see how angry you are. And that's the other thing, trying to find emotional words that really helps a person feel heard and understood when you can identify the emotions that they might be experiencing, even if you identify them wrong. Even if you say, well, it sounds like you might be really angry about this, and they say, no, I'm heartbroken. But they feel like you are trying to understand them because you're trying to label those emotions. So that is really a really great first step when it comes to language, is trying to figure out what this person is communicating to you and repeating that back with some emphasis on the emotions that they're experiencing.
My guest is Dr. Aku. We're talking about de-escalation. She's a professor at John Jay College. So when you think about the barriers to de-escalation, especially when you're dealing with police and protesters, what is keeping it from happening?
Oh, that is a big question that I don't know if we have enough time to unpack. But I think one of the main things is the basic education and recruitment of police, mm-hmm. right? The police, when police are recruited as agencies of the community, compared to being recruited as law enforcement and soldiers. You know, if you watch recruitment videos, you can see a real difference. Some of them look like advertisements for violent video games, mm-hmm. and others look like have police officers walking around the community and making relationships. There's a big difference in that kind of recruitment, and there's a big difference in that kind of education of police officers from the beginning, the culture. You know, when the culture is about you protecting the community as opposed to you enforcing the law and being the authority, then there's a different mindset all just from the ground up. And then that can make a big difference in what happens when police officers go out to these kinds of protests.
What about the protesters? Are there things that people who are going to protests should know that they could do on their part to de-escalate even within their ranks? Let's start within their ranks, because we've seen this a lot. We've seen some of the peaceful protesters having to sort of, I don't even want to use the word self-police, but to talk to other protesters who perhaps want to inflict damage and take the attention away from the actual issue at hand.
The same thing. They can connect before they redirect and remind people, you know, why we're here. And but you have to connect first so that people can hear you as you redirect them toward the fact that if we become violent, then we take the light off of why we're here to protest. But in those situations, in crowds, people can get so overwhelmed by the crowd think that it's hard for them to stay present in the moment and present to what the mission is. So one thing is just to, as things start off, remind everybody in the crowd, what is our mission? You know, what are we here for? How are we going to do this? And make sure that everyone is on the same page, or try to make sure that everybody's on the same page as to what the purpose of the protest is, so that things do not, you know, veer off in a different direction.
This is a little bit of a tough question. Do you, given what we have seen in the past week, do you get beyond a point where de-escalation can work? Or is it always possible?
That is a hard question. I think it's much easier to do with individuals than it can be with a group. You know, at some point, I think things can tip over the edge with a group, that it can be much harder to pull things back. But human beings are so complicated, it's impossible to say. I think there is always the possibility of de-escalation, but it really is about how much people are dedicated to trying. You know, we've definitely seen situations where things have been violent and feel like they're out of control, where somebody stands up and says something that gets everybody to stop and think and listen and change. Mm-hmm. So there's always a possibility, but often fear by the police that are coming and confronting the situation can make it hard for them to be willing to stop and talk and find a different way. And if they don't have the training and the skills, understanding that there are different ways to approach things, then they're more likely to rely on the skills that they have, which are very combative, as opposed to encouraging people to think of a different way.
when you are working with officers, do you ever do role play at all?
Oh gosh, that is the best part of our training. Yeah. We do role play. We have professional actors. We call them actor trainers because they are trained in working with the police officers to help elicit some of their reactions and things that we're looking for. And so, yes, we do a lot of role play in the training, and that's pretty wonderful.
What's some of the language used in the role play? I'd be very curious.
Our role plays, a lot of the work we're doing is around helping the police understand mental health and mental illness. And so really helping them recognize that you need to have some special tools when you're trying to de-escalate when somebody's dealing with mental illness issues. But a lot of the same language that I'm using now in terms of two ears, one mouth, the importance of listening, you know, the actors are trained to throw out certain terms and words, but the police have to listen to catch them, to understand that this is what you're going to need to provide in order to de-escalate the situation. So it's really a lot of training, getting them to listen and be able to reduce their own fears and anxiety so that they can hear clearly and then figure out how to use their words in order to get the actors to comply with the actions they're requesting.
I don't know the answer to this question, and I don't know if you know it either, so please just feel free to say that's outside of my wheelhouse. Is this kind of training mandatory? Does every officer have to go through it at some point in their training?
Okay, so let me preface this by saying this is opinion, okay. in terms of not fact. I know that all of the H&T and ESU, those recruits do have to go through this training. That's the training that I do. Mm-hmm. There is also some other form of this training that happens at the police academy, but I'm not quite sure if it's sufficient, if it's long enough. We used to do that training at John Jay. We did a one-day training, and I always felt like this is a good start, but police officers need a lot more of this. But I'm not involved at the police academy, so I can't say for sure how much training goes on, but I definitely believe that this should be a major part of the training, and I don't think it is. But again, that's opinion, not fact.
Well, my next question was about your opinion on that, so you got there before I did.
Yeah.
My guest is Dr. Aku, adjunct professor at John Jay College. We're talking about what de-escalation actually means in practice. All through the show this week, Doctor, we have been really trying to check in with people about their mental health during this time. And we've had Dr. Jessica Isom from New Haven on, and we've been taking listeners' calls. So I wanted to just touch on that for just a note. What advice do you have for people who are just truly stressed out by what's happening right now, ways to handle it, things they can do to have self-care, or warning signs that they need to maybe practice self-care?
Great question. And, you know, what I also do is I'm a clinician. I have a private practice, and a lot of what I do is focusing on self-care. So I'm all ready to talk about that. I think that one thing that's really important, and that's come up already today in a couple of sessions I've had, is understanding how you can protest, right? That you don't have to be out on the front lines if that's not what feels right for you. And that there are all sorts of different ways to protest, and it's okay to find the one that fits you. Because sometimes people feel pressured. You know, they know other people that are out there on the streets protesting, and they feel like, well, I have to be out there too. But that's not the right way for everyone, for a variety of reasons, beyond just COVID and the possibility of now bringing home an infection to your family if you make it home safely. So giving yourself permission to find the way that works for you, but also knowing that you need to find something, that you can't just sit with the anger and all these bad feelings, that you need to put them in some direction. So whether that is protesting with money and being part of the blackout day, or going out on the street if that's what you feel like is comfortable for you, but just finding your own way to protest. This is one of my ways. Being on the radio with you is giving me an opportunity to talk about this so I can do something with my own strong feelings about the situation. So finding what feels right to you, and paying attention to what feels right for you. To understand that watching the video over and over again is probably only going to make you feel worse. See how you feel. Check in with how you feel. And be okay with turning the video off, not watching. that we don't, you don't, just because it's out there, it doesn't mean you have to watch it all the time. Pay attention to if you're having nightmares, if you're feeling depressed, and use those as times to understand that you do need to do something for self-care, like meditation, go for a walk if you can. It's just, there's too much to go into in short here, mm-hmm. but nightmares and anxiety and crying suddenly, those kinds of things are indicators that may be taking in more than you can handle and that you need to stop and process and take a break and take good care of yourself.
One last question. When you work with officers, how receptive are they to this, to de-escalation training?
It runs the gamut. Mm-hmm. I've worked with some officers that seem to be just thrilled to have the tools. And then there's some that really push back and are clear that they're doing it because they have to, but don't really believe that this makes any sense. And then there's some that start out that way, and by the end, when they've worked with the actors and they see how using their words can be effective, are really happy they've gone through the training. So there's a whole gamut there.
I've been speaking with Dr. Aku, who teaches at John Jay College's de-escalation program for the NYPD's Hostage Negotiation Team and Emergency Services Unit. Doctor, thank you so much for sharing your expertise today.
Thank you so much for having me.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.